Welcome to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Retirement Trust. Indications are that firms will be working in a remote or hybrid model for the foreseeable future. While firms have learned a lot about how to manage in this environment, it remains problematic. Today, we're talking with Randy Anderson of E3 Professional Trainers about how to make the most of remote work. In his previous career as a sales manager for various regional TV stations around the country, Randy gained a lot of experience in managing salespeople remotely. He has since applied that knowledge to the design services industry. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much for having me, Jerry. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
So you gave a presentation at the recent fall conference and about how to do remote management, and basically, managers seem to be having a hard time with remote work. Why is that?
Well, you know, I think most people who have managed would say managing anytime is tough. You know, when you, I heard another speaker a few years ago say, where two or more are gathered together, there will be conflict. Well, you've got conflict and you've got different personality types and different working styles and different learning styles. I think when you throw in the extra layer of, you know, they're not right down the hall. We can't all meet in the conference room once or twice a week. We can't have a stand-up meeting late in the afternoon if we need to. I just think that that adds to the challenge of really connecting with people. I spend a tremendous amount of my time training on employee engagement. I think it's more difficult to get people truly engaged or fully engaged when they're in their dining room or when they're in their kitchen area table or when they're in their utility room at a spare desk or something, as opposed to, I got dressed this morning, I got up, I came to the office, we started with a team meeting. I just think for a lot of people, that's a pretty difficult transition, and managers included. And so those who have managed the same way for a long time, who haven't really gotten creative, I think they're finding it difficult to truly engage their people and drive productivity that way.
So you had mentioned that that remote work has been coming for a while, I guess maybe not in this industry, but in other industries. So you've sort of seen it coming. Is it doable?
Yeah, it's doable. I mean, a great example. I've been doing it for 16 years. Here I sit in what should be my dining room today, and it takes a while to ramp up and get used to it and, you know, to retrain my kids to not come running in with the kids from around the neighborhood during summer break or Christmas break or whatever and yell and scream. It's doable. It does require, you know, probably an added measure of self-discipline. It becomes challenging because maybe you don't have all the different things to organize as well, such as file cabinets or credenzas, spare closets, archive rooms, things like that, that we're accustomed to. And so, you know, I'm sticking files in a pile as opposed to in a file cabinet or something like that, but it's certainly doable. I don't know how I could more strongly disagree with, I don't think it's optimal. Very few people, I think, are gonna perform at an optimal level in a 100% remote environment. And that's one of the things I'm seeing as I go around and work with every type of industry and organization you could think of, is we're beginning to see more of the hybrid, you know, 1 or 2 days in the office and 2 or 3 days at home, or, you know, 1 day in the office, or a meeting every week or two. My oldest son is in Dallas working, and they have now gone to one team meeting every 2 weeks. I think we're going to start to begin to see more and more of that if you're not already experiencing it. But yeah, I mean, the short answer to the question is, yeah, it's doable, but it's difficult. It truly is difficult.
Well, what do you think of the hybrid model?
You know, I am in favor of 100% in person as far as the crux of your team, the core of your team. And as you said, and I had said in the recent ACEC conference presentation that I delivered, this has been coming for quite a while. I think some companies have seen this as an opportunity to allow a little bit more flexibility, to allow a little bit more family-friendly environment where, you know, if I want to go see my kids' Thanksgiving program at 10 on Thursday before Thanksgiving week, I've got the freedom to do that. But I do think to have that point of connection where you're coming in, you're looking across the conference room table, or you're, you know, poking your head into somebody's cubicle, or you know, we're having a one-on-one in my manager's office. I just think that there's something, I'm not going to say magical, but I think there's something to that really helps. If somebody can be organized enough and be self-disciplined enough to work from home part of the time, if I were still managing a team, I would be willing to do that. And I know that there are a lot of people who are doing that because, they've got an employee that they love whose spouse got transferred 10 states away, and they want their person to keep working for them. Well, if we can telecommute, and if we can communicate, you know, via Zoom meeting, Skype meeting, whatever, forget about the brand name, I'm talking generically there. I'm big on measuring results. I'm not big on measuring methodology or effort. If the results continue to be produced, then, you know, I'm willing to let that person have more latitude. If it shows that they need to be in person and that's no longer going to be functional because of their circumstances, then probably something is going to have to dramatically change, probably a separation there.
Do you think remote work is harder on managers or on their reports?
You know, I think that kind of depends on your perspective. I would say as far as the input into it, I would probably say on managers. And I think there's a lot of frontline employees that would disagree with that. Well, you don't know what it's like when I can't see anybody, or I don't have this or that. But what I see is, again, to try to fully engage them is hard enough in person, much less when they're on the phone. The report, let's say the report is doing their job optimally, in person or remotely. Let's say they're doing their job optimally. Well, they've got their stack. They've got their list of things they've got to do. The manager has to throw in the psychology of full engagement. You know, the human dynamic of it. It's no longer a task oriented. It's no longer a process oriented job. It becomes a people oriented job. And I'm not saying the frontline people don't have interaction with their customers. I can make a phone call to my customer just as easily from my dining room as I can from my office. But to try to be creative and get people engaged in their work is an added challenge that the frontline employee, or their, as you term them, the reports, are not really experiencing. They're not having to do that. And I will say, I have encouraged my clients, when you've got remote employees, let them take turns running the Zoom meeting. You know, let them see how difficult it is when people won't turn on their video, or they're checking email, or they didn't get up and get dressed, they didn't get shaved this morning. If they're, you know, if they're a guy that didn't shave this morning, they don't look like business. They don't dress like business. They're maybe they're barefooted in their flip flops, and it's just, you don't have that mindset. So if you let them run the meeting, you know, you collaborate with them to set the agenda, and they run the meeting, they get a feel for that. And I think most of the time, it's probably a little bit surprising to them what it takes to do that.
Taking it a little wider, maybe, from the individual manager and frontline employee to the whole company, what does remote work do to corporate culture? I would imagine that it's suffering. Is there a way to balance corporate culture and remote work?
Yeah, and I think that's what we're beginning to see and I go back to the example I used with my son's company. He was working, big time national name, Yelp, on Madison Avenue. And they had said they were never planning to go back in person. In fact, they sold one of their two buildings in Lower Manhattan. Now he's working for a smaller organization in Dallas. And I think that's what they had begun to see, was that they were having a difficult time creating that corporate culture, that organization-wide atmosphere, culture, feel, whatever you want, the environment, whatever you want to put there. And I think that's why they have required of each of their teams that they have to meet in person, in the office, in the building, at least twice a month. When you talk about corporate culture, I'm preparing right now a webinar that I'm going to be doing in the next several weeks on being a farmer of culture. I live in West Texas. We're in a very agriculturally based area here. It is harvest season right now. I'm not sure when folks will be listening to this podcast, but I'm here. I'm recording this the 1st of November, and it's harvest season. And, you know, everybody wants to be a farmer when it's harvest season, because that's when you get to cash in. But they had to prepare the soil last spring. They had to plant the seeds. They had to nurture those seedlings until it got up. People who are not around cotton farming won't know what this means, but if it rains early in the process, when the sprigs have barely come up, there's a process they have to go through called sand fighting, where they got to get on the tractor sometimes at two, you know, if it rains in the evening, they wait till it gets just the perfect amount of dry so that the tractor doesn't get stuck in the field. And they may jump on a tractor at 2:30 in the morning, because if they wait till the sun comes up, the cotton is dead. They've got to weed the fields. They've got to fertilize the cotton. They've got to, you know, make sure the pests, you know, spraying with pesticides. Nobody wants to farm. Everybody wants to harvest. And that creating that culture is the same way. I mean, we've got to weed out the negative people, or we've got to weed out the, you know, but we've got to take care of negative attitudes about things before they get started. We've got to fertilize, we've got to water, we've got to nurture, we've got to develop people, we've got to do training. Whole lot easier for me to coach in real time if I'm working next to somebody or down the hall, as opposed to across town or across the state. So yeah, I think creating that culture of excellence, that culture of teamwork, that culture of customer or client-oriented ways of doing business, where I kind of overhear. I had this happen one time before. I'm in my office. It's when I was still managing a sales team. I was in my office, and let's say 10 to 15 feet from the door of my office, there's a door to what we called a bullpen, which had 8 cubicles back there. One of my salespeople was in his office in the middle of the afternoon. Everybody else was out making sales calls. And so I wasn't trying to listen in. I could hear him talking on the phone. And I wasn't even listening to his conversation, but I heard him hang the phone up. I heard the handset click on the base of the phone. And just kind of under his breath, not knowing anybody could hear, I heard him say, "God, I can't get anything done for all these customers that keep calling me." And I had to go back and talk to him about, if the customers quit calling, we've got a problem. Well, if you're in your house and I'm in my house, I don't overhear that conversation, and I can't coach to the culture of, we always want to be glad that the customer called, even if they have a problem. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's hard. And I think the balance of the necessity of distancing versus the value of culture, that's a hard thing to strike in balance, you know, to put those two things together and make them coexist in the exact equation that's going to make the recipe come out right. Yeah, I definitely think that's going to be something we're going to have to work on collectively. And I think that's going to be a steep and long learning curve for us.
Yeah, we at our, not at the fall conference, but at the previous conference we had, our convention in spring, we had three big firm leaders who spoke about various subjects that they were dealing with, and this came up, and one of them basically mandated that everyone had to be back in the office on March 1st because their culture was that important to them.
Yeah. Well, it was very interesting, and this was several months ago. So are you saying they mandated that for this coming March the 1st or for last spring?
Last spring.
Okay. Yeah. And so, and again, I'm in Texas, and I'm not trying to pick a political fight with whoever's listening to this, but we've been more open here than they are some places. We've been more open in this part of the state than they have been in the highly populous areas like Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio. We've been much more open here. And I hear those mandates, but I saw a very interesting, very, very interesting piece on 60 Minutes. I guess it was last fall. It was probably almost a year ago from when we were recording this podcast. And it was one CEO who had made the decision that they were never going back full time, and had sold properties, office properties, or relinquished leases or whatever, had actually gone from, you know, paying rent to giving extra money to their employees to buy nicer office chairs or faster, internet service, or, you know, extra monitors in their home, whatever the case may be, because they were never going back. The other one was a CEO who they got back as soon as legally was allowable, because they just saw it two very different ways. So yeah, I think it's interesting, the ones who are mandated, and then you have the folks who are fearful of being exposed to COVID versus others who are fearful of the side effects and what's going to happen as a result of the isolation. I mean, that's one of the things that you keep hearing undertones of is it may take us years to realize the damage that the pandemic has done to us psychologically, with the number of spousal abuse cases being up, the number of child abuse cases being up, the number of suicides are up. And we're not really hearing about that. We're hearing of hospitalizations and deaths as related to COVID. But then you've got the other people who are dying because they were afraid to go to the hospital and getting COVID, when really what they needed was a heart surgery, or they needed cancer treatment. And so, you know, the balance there between those two things is just so difficult to strike, where everyone feels comfortable, everyone feels confident, but everyone is truly engaged and as productive as they can possibly be.
I think you only find that balance after the fact, which is unfortunate, but I guess that's
yeah.
That's,
and it may be quite a long time after the fact in this case. I mean, it may be years before we know.
Getting back to the remote work idea. So in your experience, what are some typical mistakes that you've seen managers make in trying to be good remote managers?
You know, I think one of the ones that really stands out is one that was a problem when people were in person as well. But that, you know, trying to manage generically, we're trying to manage everybody the same way. And we've got to manage individually. We've really got to make sure that we're addressing that person where they are. You know, I know everybody's going to have their issues. Everybody's got their challenges during this time. And I'm not saying we shouldn't be empathetic, but I don't think empathetic means we have to excuse underperformance. You know, I can empathize with you that your kid is still not back in school full time, or I can empathize with you that, you know, you've got a family member who's got COVID, or you've got aging parents. And so you're fearful of being around people at the workplace because you got to come home to the aging parents. But that doesn't, you know, we can't accept the excuses to allow the shortfalls, because, you know, business is not going to wait for us to decide everything's perfect. And so I think, you know, that's another one, is that we demonstrate empathy in the form of accepting excuses. You know, I think another thing, we probably during this time more than ever need to work with the individuals to set their own short and medium term personal professional growth plans. And so where before we could kind of set about a generic deal, we're going to work on communication this year, or we're going to work on this. Now you've got managers who are still doing that, as opposed to saying, hey, Jerry, I want to work with you personally to set a plan for 2022 and how you're going to grow there. And so, you know, if we're managing generically and the thought in your brain, even if you don't say it out loud, is, well, I just need to make a round of calls today. Well, that generic phone call, hey, just wanted to check on you, just wanted to see if everything's okay, that's not going to yield the same fruit that it would if you called them about something specific for that person, for that team member that they've been working on. Hey, I wanted to call and check up on the so-and-so project to see how it's going. And then at the end, okay, anything else at all I can do for you? Anything I can help you with? You know, I don't want to start with the broad general, is there anything you need today? We used to laughingly say, I was in the advertising business, and the joke was that our salespeople would go to a business owner and say, you don't want to buy any advertising today, do you? Well, you know, of course the answer to that is no. You know, you need any help with anything? No, I'm good. Okay, well, let me know if you need anything. Then we hang up and go to the next phone call. So I think we got to be more purposeful and more intentional about that.
And beyond that, do you have any other recommendations that you would suggest for firm managers?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I might suggest this to half the people I talked to, even if they were still in person, because I don't know that we did a great job of it. But again, I think it's more important, or it's magnified, or, you know, however you want to look at that. Set individual strategies, you know, spend some time. The term I use fairly often is called recalibrating the compass. You know, let's just step back. In my world, the speaking world, the training world, there's an adage they use. Sometimes we need to work on the business, not in the business. So step back away from it. You know, maybe it's time to have, even if it's not, you know, whatever time of year you normally do it, it's time to do an employee assessment or a performance appraisal. I always use the term appraisal as opposed to evaluation, because I want to say, you know, where is this individual bringing value? When you think about appraisal, you typically think about the word value. Where could they bring greater value, either to the team or to our customers or clients? I want to set that, you know, I want to set those goals, those key objectives. I want to work with that individual, let them identify some of those as well. So that they can have some buy into what it is. I don't want to just tell them what I think they're doing a terrible job of. I want to see if they realize that that's an area that they're weak in. I want to help them to create strategies and tactics that, you know, can help them see it as a climbable mountain, you know, and an attainable goal. And so here's, you know, you need to work on your time management. Okay, well, there's a key objective. The strategic areas there might be your organization skills, your prioritization, your focus, your daily schedule that you've got, and what you're doing, you know, to reduce those distractions. Then the tactics could be, okay, I don't want you to spend 6 hours on Friday cleaning off your desk, quote unquote. What that really probably means is you're not going to be able to find anything for the next week and a half or 2 weeks because you just stuck it all in drawers. Pick one drawer and begin to organize that. You know, if it's communication, why don't you pick, you know, one area? We're going to work on doing our written communication more effectively, sending fewer emails, but the emails we send cover more topics. We're going to have fewer Zoom calls or fewer phone calls, and try to accomplish more of what we can through emails. Those become the tactical, the things that we do daily that are going to help with that. And so, you know, if we will spend the time, you know, another old adage, I remember all these little quips and quotes from throughout my career, another adage from the insurance business, I've never been in it, but I got a friend that's in it. One of the things they say is the more time you take, the more money you make. So the way I look at that is the more time I take on the front end, helping an individual create a personal professional growth strategy, an individualized growth strategy, the better that growth strategy is going to be, well, the more yield it's going to produce, the better return on investment of time. So let's say I spend two, three, or four hours helping this employee create a plan. Well, if that plan helps them every day, every week, every month for the next year, that was a great investment of 4 hours. I'm not having to babysit as much. I'm not having to help them with nickel and dime questions as much. They're not waiting to try to find me. They feel empowered. That they're equipped to do their job, and in the end, they're going to be more engaged at that point. So yeah, I mean, that's my best recommendation is, again, take the time to be strategic. Don't just continue to be reactionary or responsive, but look and say, what can we do proactively to help this individual grow into a higher contributing level, higher contributor on the team, so that their value grows here? And studies show if we help people, you know, people say, well, I hate to pour all that time into somebody because then they're just going to end up and leave you for somebody else. Not necessarily. There's a lot of employee satisfaction surveys that show if somebody feels that people above them, where they are committed to their growth, they're more likely to stay. And so I did a presentation yesterday, and one of the statistics there, in fact, I've got this laying on my desk right now. It's a recent survey from a group called Bit AI showed that 37% of employees stay where they are because of the people they work with, not the work that they do, not the pay that they get, not the position they're in, not the building that they go to. It's for the people that they work with. And everybody's probably heard the expression before, people don't quit companies, they quit managers. So if I'm helping them to grow, I'm actually increasing the likelihood that they'll stay with us long term and be better and better and better and more and more and more valuable.
And this is just a surmise from what you've said is in this period where we're sort of all separated and we don't have the sort of the distractions of the office, it would seem to me that perhaps managers actually have more time to put into planning for individual employee, their individual reports or frontline employees for planning their future than they might have had when we're all in the office and everyone's running around and we're all trying to get things done.
I 100% agree with that. And the funny thing is, I have said that several times over the last few months, and they always kind of have to smirk and laugh because they realize when you say it, they realize it. But until you say it, much of it never crossed their mind. They're like, well, I'm making more phone calls and I got all these Zoom meetings and everything. And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying to add something to your schedule. I'm saying to change the way you spend your time. Let's change the way we spend these 3 or 4 hours. And instead of having Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting after Zoom meeting to check in on people and ask them what they're planning to do that day, let's give them a plan and empower them to go and make that plan a reality. I mean, let's give them the compliment of saying, I think you've got enough self-discipline and you care enough about your job to go do that. And so, yeah, when you say that, I don't know if you heard me, I kind of laughed in the background, because when I say that out loud from the microphone at a conference or, if I'm in an organization, you can tell by the look on their face when you say it, they realize it's exactly right. You're exactly right. But it's just up to that point, we really felt busy, because I think there's a bit of self-satisfaction, and there's a bit of, I'm creating value if I look and feel busy. The busier I am, the more valuable I must be to my company. No, not really, not necessarily. We certainly don't want to sit around and look like we don't have anything to do, but to sit and just think strategically, it can have a much bigger payoff than just typing the 50th email today that really sounds the same as the one you did last week and the week before that and the week before that. So to create that, to set aside that time for strategic thinking, to close your door in this open door policy generation we're in, which I think that's gotten a misnomer. Open door policy doesn't mean you have to be accessible all day, every day. It means that when they've got an issue, they can set a time to come talk with you. Close your door, turn off your email, don't answer your phone, and just think strategically about those individual team members and how can we multiply their skills and maximize their contribution, both to the organization and to the clients and customers. Yeah, so I think what you said is, it could not be more true. I think it would be hard to make that a more true statement than what you just said.
Well, then I think that's probably a good place to end. That's I'll take credit for that one. I appreciate you.
Walk out on a good one.
Yeah. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
So you've been listening to the Engineering Influence Podcast, presented by the American Council of Engineering Companies and sponsored by the ACEC Retirement Trust. Thanks for listening.